Welcome to the Inside Out Podcast, a podcast for and by alumni and the current students of the sports studies. The study, ISMB, International Sports Management and Business, and the Dutch counterpart, SMNO, Sport Management and Onderneming. Fantastic to have you listening in today. My name is Rafael, a current ISMB student, and...
And my name is Peter van Paasen. I'm an ISMB lecturer. And today we're going to talk to one of our alumni, Luca Messina from the beautiful island of Sicily. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you very much, guys.
Great to have you here. You grew up in Sicily, but your parents are from two different cultures. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Correct. Yeah. So my name is Luca Messina. So it's a very common name in Italy. If you search for me on LinkedIn, you'll find about 200 of me.
Okay. But there's one real Luca Messina.
Of course. I was forced to stand out since a very young age, you know. But basically, I was born and raised in Sicily. So I guess by nurture, I feel very Sicilian, you know, because I belong to that culture and I grew up there. My father is from Sicily and he was born and raised there, while my mother is from the UK. She's from the north of England. So, I was since very young age growing up exposed to two different cultures, to very different cultures. And at the same time, this took me on a path to see, like, the differences between how things are done in a place of the world or another. So
sure,
yeah, I guess that's it.
And did you travel back and forth to England visiting family a lot?
Yeah, I did. I was very lucky, actually. So my parents work with tourism in Sicily. They both work together. They're called Paolo and Paula. It's terrible. But and they work in the same office. They rent cars. So in the winter, I'd be in Sicily. But usually in the summer, when the weather's the most beautiful and sea is the bluest in Sicily, they would send me away because it was a high season of work. So they'd send me to my English family. It's a very big family, very loving big family. And I was able to stay with like my several cousins, where there's a lot of us. And I'd hang out with them, play lots of sports and get exposed to a bit of English bullying and English culture, I guess.
Okay, yeah. So you got the full scope.
Yeah, full scope. That's how you really learn a language and the culture. If you're a kid and you get made fun of if you don't know the things.
Yeah. And looking back, so besides the language, of course, what did you gain from that experience, kind of going back and forth between England and Sicily, when you compare yourself to your friends and your classmates just in Sicily?
I think one big thing that we have in Sicily is the fact that anybody who grows up there knows that eventually you're going to have to leave. Or I grew up with the knowledge since a very young age that I was going to have to leave. It was also induced by my parents. My mom was a woman who left her small village to go somewhere else. So like there was also this feeling in the family. In Sicily, usually people stay home till they're like 30, then they get married and then they find somebody, you know, like a job, and they kind of settle. It's a very family oriented culture.
Yeah.
So I guess the first thing I got was the opportunity and the possibility, through the fact that I spoke English, to know that I had the rest of the world at my, you know, as a possibility. And I learned the fact that, you know, I'm lucky to be exposed to be able to try and explore many new places. And at the same time, I think from a very young age, I was able to see that not everything in the place where you grow up is how people think it is. Mm-hmm. So there can be thousands of different perspectives on the different things that we live in everyday life, you know, like, Sicilians are very picky on some things, silly things, like even food, right? You can only eat a certain thing at a certain time, etc.
Oh, really?
And when you go to England, to a country that's completely different, suddenly you realize that all these rules that are set up by one culture are completely disregarded by another. So, you know, truth lies in the middle, I guess.
Yeah. So was this attitude the thing that made you come to the Netherlands for study, especially ISMB?
No. No. So I did a school exchange when I was 16 with a Dutch school. It was a 1 week thing. And I basically fell in love with this Dutch girl, not with Holland, not with ISMB. So the drive that I had to try and get into Holland was actually coming from the heart, which the more we talk, the more you'll realize that at the end, in anything I do in life, that's the main guidance point for me, to be honest.
Sure.
And then I also love sports. Sports has always been at the center of my life in England. Five boys, all the same age.
Okay.
So there was all sports, you know, anything goes, a lot of like testosterone in the house, let's say. So I've always been competitive and loving competition and sports. And I found ISMB that was offering possibilities of traveling and going to different places and doing real life experience and to work, etc. So when I found it, matching with the idea of you know, the love, I decided to go to ISMB, to Holland. And I wasn't, it was Holland as in any other country really. I wasn't like too picky over where I would have been, but I like the idea of Holland.
Cool. And you mentioned sports, right? Several sports, but any particular sport that stood out for you early on?
I've done a lot of different sports in my life. I think like I started very young playing football, like anybody does in Italy. Like I must have been six. I was swimming my whole life. I've been exposed to water my whole life. Then around 8 years old, I actually started playing tennis with like some friends of mine because their parents were also doing tennis. And it was three of us. We were like the international community of my city. It's a small city, but we were a half English, half Dutch and a half Australian guy. So our parents were like helping each other out. So they'd share us and take us to the tennis school together. So I did that for like 8 years. So I was a competitive tennis player. Mm-hmm. And around that, every time I'd go to England, I'd try new sports. So I was like one of the few Sicilians who played cricket, hockey,
really?
Like field hockey, you know, like the Dutch field hockey. I don't know, all these different sports that they had. They have squash, they had a game called fives. So I was exposed to a bunch of different sports. The only one I wasn't very good at was basketball. Your thing.
Why not?
Your thing.
I cannot imagine.
I got no rhythm. Okay. I don't know. I swear, I don't know. I didn't play it enough, I think. That's it.
Okay, cool. And then you come to Amsterdam. You join ISMB. With your sporting background, in the first year, you get exposed to maybe some new sports. There's sports in the curriculum, but of course they serve a different purpose, right? Teaching you management skills. What was that like for you?
It was very cool. So I must say, when I joined ISMB, the first year, my impression was interesting. It was twofold because on the one side, I was very happy to be exposed to all these sports, but in my expectation of university was a little bit different than what the reality I met. Mm-hmm. So in Italy, we have a very old school system that's based on a fascist sort of upbringing. So it's, I would go to school, I went to a, you, at 13 you choose where you go to, right?
Right.
And I went to a scientific lyceum because I was, I don't know, my great grandma said, you're going to be a doctor or an engineer. So I said, an engineer, because doctors have to be with sick people. So this was like the story. But then I realized that wasn't really my passion, you know? So I studied, but it's like a really heavy curriculum. You're expected to study like 4 hours in the afternoon. There's oral examinations that are surprised pretty much every day. Like I must say, from my experience seeing different cultures, Italian middle school education is like very, very good,
right,
but very demanding as well.
Rigid, right.
So then when I came here, I felt this very open-minded and very sort of relaxed way of doing things that I thought like, wow, it's not a challenge at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of strayed away the first year. I had like, I think I was nearly kicked out of the program. I didn't get my PE. I missed like 12 credits because I was in Amsterdam. I was working in a restaurant at the time and I was enjoying my first year in Amsterdam as a young 18-year-old.
Was the girl still in play at that time or no?
No, the girl became a very close friend. Uh-huh. My love story didn't go the way I wanted, I guess, but we've still been in contact so far and her family became my touch point in the Netherlands culture. So I've been blessed to meet these people. They've helped me so much and I'm ever grateful to them basically. And I became a sort of member of the family. I did all my Sinterklaases with them. Every year I improved my gedicht.
Yeah.
And that went on. But so, sorry, getting back to the point, I drift away sometimes. You can stop me whenever this happens. But I guess my first impression was a bit of disappointment of like, I'm not challenged by this. I'm playing sports, but the lessons I'm learning from it are pretty simple and like basic understanding of life. So my first exposure to this was, it's fun, but I don't feel the challenge, so I don't feel the drive to push too much. I guess that was the first the first impression.
So was there something that changed your mindset?
After the first year, aside from the fact that I was like, I'm not getting kicked out of the program. So I was like, okay, you know, I basically did like a 10-day period of just like all nighters, and my mum called me last minute Messina, and this has been a classic for me over time, and I think it made sense. But I was able to pull it off. I got all my credits back, and then from there I went on a more positive streak of just, you know, I just had to manage it basically, and I knew that if I was on top of it, I would have been able to do better. Where ISMB for me transformed a little bit was after the moments of doubt, which are normal in any path that you follow in life, I think.
Sure.
It transformed from the second year onwards because I saw how it gives you the opportunity to take control over your life. As in, you can do an internship 3 times, test on field and on your skin something practical. So yeah, maybe there's not all this theory-oriented studying which you expect in an Italian university, which is really heavy and you expect to be a really hard worker and student. So probably you'd be way more prepared on a theoretical level, but there's no exposure to the real world where things don't only work on what you know, it's also how you interact with people and how you expose yourself and how you love or don't love what you do.
Yeah.
So I was trying to find something in the second year to go, there was the Brazil World Cup at the time, I wanted to get involved with them. But then that fell through, it didn't work out. And this gentleman, Krain Koloff was his name, he came by to talk about an organization called SCORE.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had a chat with him afterwards and I said, you know what, I think I'm going to try this out. I'm going to go to South Africa. And this was the start of something new. And then from there, that was a beautiful experience where I was in a different country. I was 19, I think, living in a township in South Africa. Exposed to a completely new culture, it's an experience that has left a lot, like in my life, that has changed me a lot in a beautiful way, and from there I kept on going on with more joy in ISMB because I could see that I was the owner of my own destiny in a way that I could try different things and see how they felt.
Yeah. Now, before we go into the internships, let's go back to your first year because you mentioned that you have the most common name. In Italy, maybe, but your background was a little bit different than the other kids growing up. Now you enter this classroom where there's a lot of international kids, a lot of kids with a multicultural background like yours. What was that like being in that classroom environment?
I loved it. Yeah, this I loved. I was like, I'm a social butterfly.
Okay.
I love to chat and
we noticed.
You noticed? Yeah, yeah, fair enough. Okay. So basically, I remembered I guess one of the most memorable moments of the first year was the introduction week where, you're a young 18-year-old guy, you don't know what's going to happen. And I just showed up and I meet all these people. There's like people that are older than me and younger than me and people that have done different paths of life already and that are then deciding to study. And there was people from, Greece, Africa, like there was Mozambique and South Africa. There was people from England. There was people from countries I've never even heard of before, or all these mixed. Also, there was a lot of like international mixes like myself. And I found it fascinating because there was so much to learn.
Yeah.
So many languages to pick up on, which is like an obsession of mine as well. So this is like a thing that I'd love to chat about. So yeah, I loved it. To be honest, I'd surfed on a wave of enthusiasm of interacting with these people during my first year so much. And I guess that's also what drove me a little bit away from my studies. But
sure.
Yeah.
Which can happen, of course.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
I finished, eh?
It's completely understandable. I think all ISMB students coming in, they feel the same. It's maybe you're in your own bubble and you're multinational, but then you come to ISMB and you just meet people who are the same as you, different experiences, but the mindset is still there and you just get to meet them and it's a wonderful experience.
And how was it from your standpoint? Because not only are you in a classroom with international students, but there's good old Dutchies, right? And some of them maybe haven't traveled that much, don't have the international experience. How do you gel with those fellow students?
Well, I mean, I was living in Holland, so I was surrounded by Dutchies outside of school, and I wanted to get to know these Dutchies better. So actually, the Dutchies in the international environment were one of the best middle steps between the outside Dutch reality and the international reality I was living in. So for me, they were a perfect point of contact to be able to access this outer world.
Mm-hmm.
I had some of my school friends help me prepare my first Sinterklaas gedichtjes for this family that I was is for international people. A Sinterklaas gedicht is like a poem that you write during a Dutch celebration, which is Sinterklaas. Yep. To maybe make fun a little bit of somebody else while you make them a gift. It's a very creative celebration. I think it's more fun than Christmas, actually.
Yeah. I think so as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Dutchies help you to acclimate to the Dutch culture overall because they're like a middleman almost. The international students, you felt at home, you learn all these new languages and habits and all that kind of stuff. How about the teachers?
I feel like I bonded very well with the teachers. During the course, of course, sometimes you're a student, you don't like everything a teacher says, so you might take a certain position and also feel like they don't get you, or like, you know, you bring a paper. I remember my first paper. Mm-hmm. My first paper was sports and culture, and I was writing about coming from like this whole very strong education. I'm not a fascist, but I wanted to make a point, like just as of like at devil's advocate, and I wanted to say how fascism influenced sports results in Italy. This was my argument.
Okay.
Because during that time, sports was really heavily induced in Italy. So actually you see the World Cup was won, I think, twice, and there was a lot of education around sports, and like Mussolini was bringing forward this thing of like the strong man.
Yep.
Now, I'm not a promoter of fascism. I'm gonna say this several times just to make sure, but my point was, I wanted to talk about this in a sports way and see how it influenced sports. I was curious about this topic, and I thought it was a provocative thing to bring up. So I also thought like, it could be a nice thing to bring up in a paper to talk about something that's different from the average everyday stuff. But I guess the idea that I was bringing in some ideas that might have not been so shared, I felt judged instead of being like, you know, of sharing a scientific opinion on something. I felt a little bit judged, and this made me feel a little bit distant. I was like, that's not cool, you know. Then I just have to write about things that everybody accepts. And so at the beginning, I had this feeling. Over time, so in the further years, I developed very close relationship with some teachers. And I believe I still actually maintain a very strong network with my teachers nowadays, you know. Like they became mentors and people that you can look for help to, you know. I think that they're all people. And I think that there was, compared to Italy as well, there wasn't this power distance that you feel in Italy. So there was more the possibility to, you know, be close to them and ask them general questions of also other things or for advice. And that's, I felt much more accessibility to them, let's say.
Right. And just to add a little bit of context, because you mentioned the word fascism a few times, and the way I understand it, There's a different nuance meaning to the word in Italy than in the Netherlands, especially maybe in the south of Italy versus the north. The way I understand it, it means adherence to an authoritative figure without asking questions, pretty much. And I think maybe in the Netherlands the word gives like a different meaning and different association. Can you explain that a little bit from your perspective?
Yeah, I think generally the common, during the period, so fascism was born before Nazism, right? So Hitler took inspiration from Mussolini, and these two strong mentalities on a histrionic character, on somebody that is basically a powerful, charismatic leader. Mm-hmm. Same thing that you see with Stalin afterwards, also in Russia, is something that was basically new at the time. And Mussolini was one of the first, if not the first, I think, to do this. So when I'm referring to this, I'm still referring to the historical moment when these figures were becoming leaders. It is a dictatorship, and it is a negative period of human history in several ways. But I'm more referring to the fact that it still had an impact on the reality that I live in. And actually in Italy now, when I go back after living in a very international world, I realize how much this mentality has influenced the culture, even in a way of, many people that watch football will be like, yeah, Italians are racist. And I believe there is a stronger presence of racism in Italy because of this influence of this right-wing mentality that is also still trickling in the general folks' knowledge. So this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So your experience here and the questions and the challenges that you were posed here kind of added depth to your understanding of the situation, the way you experienced it back home.
Yeah, it added more knowledge to, or more understanding on like how historical events in the country where I grew up influenced the current mentality of a people. And how instead, if you look at, let's say, the Netherlands as a much more liberal people who have been more free and who very strongly ask for their freedom, they stand up for their freedom a lot. I could really see the difference. Like, and you know, it's something that I was always exposed to diversity, but when I came to Holland and suddenly I'm around, you know, hundreds of different cultures, and you're exposed to being with them all the time in a very beautifully liberal country and place. And then you go back to a place where everything's normal. Everybody respects each other, but yeah. it's just in the inflections of how you talk and how you communicate with people, there's some things that show that even subconsciously, without knowing that they're saying something that could be still a discriminatory concept,
yeah.
you see it's trickled in the culture itself, in yeah. the language, without having that intention, people still discriminate.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. While you have a much more open and aware culture in the Netherlands, where you still envision the same concept a little bit, you know, of like discrimination, except this is still everywhere. But I just feel that like for some things, it was more present in Italy when I was back there.
Clear. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Sounds like you kind of sharpened your antenna, right? For understanding cultures and history a little bit. So let's use as a segue for when you went to South Africa. Because I'm sure you had some preconceived notions about what it would be like, what the country would be like, what the people would be like. And now you actually enter the country and you immerse yourself in that culture. What was that like?
I'd say my first answer now is that I loved every second of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then if I think back, I also had a hard time actually. So like the memory is more beautiful than the experience itself, I think, because there right. was challenges there as well. But I set off and it was the longest flight I'd ever taken in my life.
Uh-huh.
And I'm heading like down south so far. And I remember getting to the airport and having two guys, one really tall African guy and one really short and stocky African guy, come pick me up, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, where are they going to be taking me? And the first thing I remember, I was in the car on the road with them, and all I would do was compare the plants that I was seeing on the side of the road with the plants that I could see in Sicily. I was like, see, we come from the same place. We're brothers, you see, because we've got these same plants in our country, just like you. This is a poisonous plant. This is yeah. oleander, whatever. And I just started chatting and bonding with these people. And very soon I got involved. So I was living with a Afrikaans family,
mm-hmm.
which, and then I was working mainly with Xhosa people.
Yeah.
So in South Africa, there is actually this, I learned this on the way. So they make a distinction in everyday language, which for me was like a no-go, of like calling populations white, black, and colored.
Right.
So they literally distinguish each other like this because of, once again, the cultural influence on how it's influenced their language and their people. And, you know, there's still the remains of apartheid that was, once again, an influential moment on their on their culture and on mm-hmm. their way of being. So I was living in an Afrikaans family, which is a colored family, and they spoke like sort of Dutch. So yep. it was like one of my first, I spoke a little bit of Dutch, so I learned Afrikaans from them. And I was working with Xhosa people, and Xhosa people speak a very interesting dialect that has a
click in it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
So I remember they taught me a little bit of the Xhosa as well. And I was literally the only white guy in the township. Like, so this was very interesting. I was okay. literally the only one.
Yeah.
But I really dived into the experience, you know, like head on. So I was playing football with this team of Xhosa people, mm-hmm. and they would call me Umlungu, so when they, which is white guy in okay. In Xhosa.
Oh, that's easy. Remember,
it was, yeah, but it was like, you know, there was all this, there was this field in a beautiful place, just like on the middle of a valley. And yeah. I remember people would just sit and watch the game. And every time I had the ball, you'd go, Umlungu, Umlungu. So this was a funny thing to experience. And I mean, I don't know if I'm going to take a tangent on this, but I've got a really funny story of this game, if you want to hear one.
Go ahead. But,
so we were working for an NGO called SCORE. And in the township, we were also distributing like big bags with condoms in them for sex education. And we were basically providing the township also with condoms. UNICEF would give us also the jerseys to play the football games. But the jerseys were kind of all oversized because then they would fit, you know, all of them. But most of these Xhosa people are like also pretty short. So we're getting ready for my first ever game. And my friend Luyanda, he comes and he starts giving everybody condoms. Six condoms. And I'm like, Lura, why are you giving me these condoms? He's like, he starts laughing and he's like, ah, look at Umlungu, he doesn't know her. They make fun of me.
Uh-huh.
And eventually he says, just watch us. And they open the condom and they take like the balloon part, let's right. say, and they rip it off with their teeth and they just keep the elastic. And they use the elastic to hold their sleeves, their socks, and their shorts.
Because they were oversized.
Because they were oversized. So for the game,
ingenious.
In order to, you know. So this was like one fantastic story that I still remember to this day, that was like, you know, a cultural experience, I guess, in some way.
I thought they were trying to practice safe soccer. I don't know.
Maybe yeah, yeah. Right. Also. Yeah, yeah. Very good.
Cool. Okay.
And yeah, I guess I can really go into South Africa so much, but I guess I also ended up sleeping at Luyanda's house in his township, which is Khayelitsha, in another place. And they basically offered me their bed, which was, you know, made of rags. But there was, they were the most welcoming and amazing and smiley people of them all. And all I kept on hearing from white people was, don't go there, don't go out with them, it's dangerous. And all I got was love. So I went out partying with these guys, and literally I was like in the most dangerous part of the township. I remember we were in like this old bus, and we were all like drinking and having a good time. Yeah. They like to drink in South Africa. And all I got was people coming up to me and like, welcome here, it's amazing to have you here, it's fantastic. And I swear, it was just awesome. Yeah. There was also some interesting episodes of a little bit more aggression and like, I saw some things that also showed me how the world works around there, where I had to stay in my place a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I also learned my lesson like this. So I could talk about this for a whole other podcast. It was amazing. I was exposed to so much in such a dense period of time.
Yeah.
It was really fantastic.
Yeah.
With the passion you speak about, this seems like it was really impactful experience. Was this the same for you for the other internships and the other minor? Or the minor?
My vision changed a little bit when I headed off to the second minor. So the first minor, I ended up doing this, which was something that came from the heart. And it also came from kind of how life unfolded for me. It wasn't planned. For the second internship, I wanted to, I was becoming, so a sport that I didn't mention when I was younger, I'd been boxing. My uncle in England is a boxing teacher. He taught me to throw my first right hand. And then from there, like, I'd always been boxing on and off as a teenager. And I liked martial arts. And a housemate of mine, Benji, also a ISME student, he was watching MMA, which I didn't really know at the time. And I started watching it. And I did some business cases for university. And I started reading into it. And I was like realizing how it was the fastest growing sport in the world. And it became from a $1 million industry to a $4 billion industry within like a 20-year span or something like this. It was amazing. And it was still very small reality in Italy. It wasn't very known, it was growing. So I thought, it would be nice to get involved in this. And my vision then towards my second internship changed because I said I would like to get involved with MMA. And one other classmate of mine, Patrick, Paddy Cruikshank, he found Conor McGregor's coach's phone number on Google.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. So I don't know how, but he said, try reach out to this guy. It was kind of striking coach. And basically Conor McGregor was like a rising star at that moment.
Yeah.
And I just basically obsessed with this idea. And this is genuinely like what happened. I think his name is Owen Ruddy. And he's been one of the biggest blessings in my life of the people that I've met on my MMA journey. I basically texted him and emailed him for like 2 months straight. And it was getting closer and closer to the deadline for the internship.
Right.
And I got to a point where I was literally every week calling him and I got no reply. Every week, once a week. I just like, I said, I'm going to do it. And I remember I was nearly heading off to Sicily for Christmas. And I was sitting on my bed. It was a morning and I rang him and he picked up the phone. And I didn't know what to say. I was like, I started sweating and he was like, yeah, so is it on or not, Owen? Can I come? He said, you know what? Just come over. You know, just come over. And
you
then
wore him out.
We'll fix it. You'll what?
You wore him out.
Yeah, I wore him out. Yeah. Okay, that's what I'll do. I'm not a smart guy. I'll grind it out, you know?
There you go, yeah.
But yeah, so my vision changed a little bit because it was the passion for sports and martial arts, but also a bit of a sort of vision of, it's a small world that is growing. I want to be a player in it and I want to get involved. And if I can get involved with the people that are running it right now from wherever I can, I think it's a great place to start. So I went there with the intention of helping them out with their marketing of their gym. And we developed their social media on Instagram and on YouTube. And then from there, I also fell in love with the sport and the practice and jiu-jitsu. I'm a practitioner now and I love jiu-jitsu. I think that's become like my true obsession. And that's where it started, I guess.
Cool. And I can imagine after obtaining that internship, I remember seeing you not long after you obtained the internship and you were like buzzing with energy and you were like all hyped and you're like ready to go. But at the same time, there must have been some feeling of, okay, now I got my dream internship, now I got to perform. I really have to establish something, I really have to accomplish something. Mm-hmm. So what was the mindset that you took there? What was kind of the legacy that you wanted to leave behind and the impression?
I think my legacy, probably in everything I do, has got to do with the personal relations I have with people.
Okay.
I think the truth is that I want to work with people that I respect and that I love. And I think that building a good relationship with people that you work with well, which means obviously working hard, being respectful, showing up on time, doing what you promise, this lays the foundations for a good relationship with somebody. It's not like I'm just going to become your best friend, take you out for beers, but like, you know,
yeah.
It was literally being intentionally a professional and being a driven individual with passion and enthusiasm shows you as a good person to be around, and vice versa. People react to this energy and they'll want to be around you. So I guess this was my mindset, and the rest I had to figure out. So my mindset was, I want to get the best I can out of this. These guys are giving me a great opportunity. I want to do all I can for them. So I remember I prepared a social media plan for them. I think I can't remember the whole project exactly, but mm-hmm. It kind of evolved on the go, and we started working on their pages and on their channel, and that actually grew a lot. And now they have a fantastic channel. This was after I left as well, but like, they've created the Coach Roddy vlogs, and the Instagram page is like skyrocketed.
Oh wow, yeah.
But this evolved as well after me.
Yeah. And did you get to meet Conor McGregor?
I did actually, yeah. He kind of doesn't know who I am, like, you know, it's like, I have a big ginger beard, a bit like him, so people sometimes have made fun of that.
Right.
But I crossed paths with Conor twice in my life. So I saw him once in the gym, and at that time I was like just a big fan, you know, I was like, what the, you know, yeah. This was amazing. He just won his second belt, I think, or his first belt. So he showed up with a belt in the gym, his first belt he'd won. And then I saw him again in the States, at an after party after he won his second world title. So he had two belts. But once again, I was like a bit shy, and I didn't even want to, like, I was like, I have nothing to do with Conor McGregor aside from his coach and like my path that I want to follow.
Yeah.
And I was a bit shy to like go up to him and talk to him. I preferred to like, you know, not get too involved there. I was like, there's no real interest there, but gotcha. I was happy to share this moment. It's a beautiful story to share, you know, and
it is.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Cool.
So you've mentioned now you're a social butterfly and that you like these relations with people, and you've mentioned your love for MMA. Was this what led you to create your own athlete management firm?
Yeah. Once again, it's like, in life you dive into the river and you don't know where it takes you exactly. Right. So I started this path with Owen Ruddy and SBG Charlestown, which is the gym where I was working. And then I went back to ISMB. So leading back to the course, actually, I actually was dreaming of going to Australia. You know, mm-hmm. I've got this travel bug in me as well. You know, I'm like I like adventure.
Yeah.
Life, I don't like a boring life. You know, life has got to be fun. We live one. And I applied to do this minor in Australia, but that didn't work out. And a friend of mine was applying for Philadelphia. So I said, you know what? I'll apply for there as well. You never know. And at the end, Australia didn't work out, but they took me on board for the Philly project. I think I literally brought, I brought a presentation on esports to argue my entrance into this. But I got accepted to Philly. And being in Philly, I was able to go to New York, where Conor was fighting mm-hmm. against Eddie Alvarez, and meet Owen, who basically was able to take me into the after party with the whole team. So it was me, Owen, Paul Fogarty, another guy that's been around forever. And basically that's where I met Conor McGregor's manager. And I was starting to envision that I wanted to get involved with this world. I didn't yet see I was gonna be managing athletes. I thought like, maybe I can work with the nutrition of the athletes. Maybe I can start a podcast with the athletes.
Yeah.
But there's something that I can do for Italian MMA. I didn't know what yet. And I pretty much got the manager's contact at the after party. I wasn't shy to ask him for his contact because right. That was the point, you know? So like, that's what I did. I remember his name is Audi Attar, and they have the largest MMA management in the world right now. And basically I begged them to take me on board for my final project and internship. And with them, it was very much the same. It's like a replay of the year before. It was just like, I was obsessed with an idea. I figured this obsession thing worked. Mm-hmm. And I had nothing to lose, right? I was like, if I don't hear a hard no, I'm going to keep on asking.
Right.
So I kept on asking for several months, phone calls, uncertainty, maybe go somewhere else, you're not sure. And eventually they took me. And so I went there. And then what happened there is how I got to the MMA management in Italy. I met my current business partner who came to pitch an idea to Paradigm Sports Management of a co-management or of an event in Italy. And he was Italian. But Paradigm wasn't super interested. But I saw something. I saw a
potential.
Potential opportunity. I could have stayed at Paradigm, probably had a great time there. But I also, I wasn't sure if I wanted to live in America, and I wasn't sure if I wanted to work for somebody.
Yeah.
I was young, and I just said, like, you know what? So I quit my master's, actually. I didn't finish my master's degree, and I decided, right, I'm going to go to Italy. I moved to Milan, and we opened what was like the first MMA management in Italy at the time. It was called Superbia Management. And now we have a different one. So actually, then there was a big rocky road as well. But that's what led me to the beginning of this path. Yeah. So we had a small event in Italy. It wasn't that small, but like we had an event in Italy, and we had the first management in Italy with about 8 or 9 athletes at the beginning.
And it grew into, what is it these days?
So we started with an event called the Golden Cage, which was an event mixing entertainment and sports. So we had music and MMA mixed together because my business partner had this vision, which was fantastic. I learned a lot from him as well on how streetwear and MMA have many things in common, right? Hip hop and this sort of aggressive street music of being real.
Yeah.
And then when you look at fighters and athletes on how they're also wearing the bling and they're wearing like the sneakers and the shoes and they're listening to hip hop. So there's a big overlap.
Yeah.
And we had, to be honest, if you look at the show still, it was a spectacular show in Italy. It just didn't kick off fully. So it was, we did two and then eventually that didn't work out. We had some issues internally. Some business partners fell out and basically we decided to restart our own. So there was a schism, do you say, a separation? In the company. And we started a new company, and Superbia remained as a management, and then we started our new management called Calibian Management. And yeah, so basically now it led us to then a bunch of different collaborations, working with a bunch of different athletes, organizations all around the world. So we've had fights in South Africa, Japan, Sweden, Switzerland, Austria, UK. So I traveled a lot.
Yeah.
We weren't really making money, but I was traveling. So it was also fun, you know, with athletes. And it led us to today, where now, you know, we're still a small reality. We're not a big management, but I still do it. And I've been in the MMA world since the day that I got to Owen Roddy's. I think it's now 7 years.
Right.
And my journey is still taking me somewhere, and it's made me meet amazing people. So I'm already grateful for so much.
Ongoing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you touched upon following your passion a few times already, right? Whether it's a girl leading you to Amsterdam or MMA leading you to work in there and doing your internships there. When you spoke about South Africa, you mentioned you were looking outside the car and you saw all the plants. You're like, okay, the same plants. This is a clue to another passion of yours, right? Can you tell a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was a kid, I grew up in the countryside. So I come from Sicily. It's an island. So clearly I grew up close to the sea, but actually I was in the countryside, and I was always exposed to nature a lot as a kid. And I always found myself very much at home in nature, both underwater and in the countryside. So throughout my life, I think the two big passions that I've always had are nature and sports, as in I love animals, nature, being outdoors. It's what makes me feel good.
Right.
Right. So it's one of those things that I'm really looking for, to reload my batteries and to have a good time. And basically, the more I was working with the world of MMA, at some point, I also started to realize how what I was doing was great. We were following the fights. And I love the fighting sport because of grit and determination and hard work that there are behind fighting sports.
Yeah.
However, what are you fighting for? So are we like a fight to fight for itself? Like if you're an individual, you're fighting to be the world champion. There's so much drive and motivation behind you. That's great. But I'm not fighting for this. So what do I choose to fight for? Because a fight in a martial arts sense is a metaphor for a fight that you live in everyday life. It's a struggle towards something.
Yeah.
And you need to work hard to achieve a certain challenge. And I started to think, we live in a beautiful world that has so many problems, and we can be the positive change that we bring in this world. So I was like, I want to be more involved in something good, in something that, that can also fight for a positive. How do I get involved with this? So then basically I got involved eventually with the world of sustainability. And this started with a collaboration between one of my athletes from Africa and Just Dig It, that is a Dutch basically sustainability company. They basically dig into the ground to re-green the planet. So they're part of the re-green revolution. And funny enough, I tried to work with them and they turned me down, but I got a foot in the door and we got our athlete an ambassadorship from the turned down email. And then, you know, this was a beautiful relationship that we started with them there. And this led me to my current also other position and job and passion, where I work with an Italian company called Treedom that plants trees in developing countries around the world. So we are re-greening the planet and we are basically reforesting the planet by helping local farmers in developing countries.
Yeah, wow. So it's another venture that you dove into after, I don't want to say rejection, but your initial plan didn't really turn out as planned, and then you made the best of it.
Yeah, that's how it started. Yeah, indeed.
Cool. So all the things that you're doing right now, what are the most valuable things that you take with you from your ISMB experience and that really helped you develop into somebody that's capable of taking on all these adventures?
Okay. I mean, it's so difficult. It's a really complicated question. I mean, it's like, yeah, in your life, what's the great thing? What's the things that you carry with you from everything you've done in your life? But
it's a bit of generic question,
yeah,
but you know.
I think the truth is, for me as an individual, for the inclinations that I had as a human being exposed to the world of ISMB triggered my capability of fending for myself. It exposed me to find my way and to put myself out there and to not be afraid to take risks and give it a shot and basically shoot for the stars. You know, worst thing that's going to happen, you know, you just, I don't know, try again. I don't know. That's it really. So I think for me, this was really the biggest thing in ISMB. And all the exposure to all the different cultures was great. And I connected with so many people that I'm still in touch with today. And I don't know. Yeah.
Cool. Wonderful.
So I'm, of course, a current ISMB student. And it seems like one of the values that you really value is resilience, because you kept going for it. Do you have any other advice for students right now?
I mean, I don't want to be the guy that says this, but I clearly do because I'm going to say it, right? But I think for me, my advice is just to try. The thing that I missed, I think, when I was really young, or that I didn't think of so much, is to really just try and follow your heart, right? To try and do what you feel is truly for you and not for somebody else. Don't let other people's opinions of what they think you should do influence what you're going to do. Choose for yourself. And if it means that you're going to have to change the path that you started, change. Because life is about change. And if you want to, I guess, be happy in life, you've got to be brave to change and go for new things that you think are right for you. And you're going to make mistakes. And that's normal.
Cool. Oh, great answer. Hey, we have a little surprise for you.
Okay.
No, I'm not going to spoil it by saying anything. Okay. So we're just going to dive into to your surprise right there. So take a look at the screen.
Hey, Henry.
Hi, my name is Henry. And I had the pleasure to be the coach of Luca for a couple of years. And now we are friends. And once and then we talk about life, grab a cup of coffee and seeing each other on the terrace in Amsterdam. Luca once told me that he came from Sicily. And that there are two types who are living there. One sticks to the island and the other leaves the island for discovering new opportunities to bring back to the island, eventually to enrich the island. Luca is a type two. He leaves the island, of course, to come back because his parents are living there. But in his heart, he's always a Sicilian. But at the same time, he's also a globetrotter. Luca has a lot of energy and he's always thinking forward. He's into martial arts and even won an MMA match in New York to experience the feeling of an MMA athlete, so he could be a better athlete manager for his MMA athletes. That's typical Luca. He has the guts to go for gold and to live his dream. The great thing of Luca is that he's pragmatic
out of the box and open for new insights. That's why he can live everywhere in the world, and he makes friends everywhere. And that's one of his core competences, which is incredible to see. He's a great friend and family man, a man with a heart of gold and with the mentality of a tiger and with enormous flexibility. Not afraid to experiment with lifestyle and different angles of work, he's ready to find the lifestyle which fits him the best. It's possible that one period he lives in a big city like Amsterdam, and the next period he lives in a small village somewhere in the south of France to check an off-grid lifestyle. But Sicily is always in his heart. So I believe one day he will live there. That's where his soul wants to live. Hey, but who am I? Luca knows best, of course. Enjoy the podcast with Luca. There might be some interesting life lessons you can distract from his stories. Have fun.
Awesome.
Well put, huh?
Really, yeah, love it.
Who's this? Explain for the
indeed.
Listeners and
indeed.
What does
I
it
was
mean
already
to
gonna do it because I think he deserves a
shout out.
Oh yeah, indeed. yeah, absolutely. So this is Henry De Weert. He was my coach for a couple of years during my ISME program. He was also a lecturer during the ISME program. And we clicked very well with Henry. He was challenging me and inspiring me and supporting me as a coach. I guess because I embraced the support that he was offering in some way. So we had a very nice click. And he was actually somebody that stayed along my path also after ISMB. So every once in a while, we would, you know, when I was back in Amsterdam or after another new adventure or something like this, we'd shoot each other a message and say, you want to meet up for a coffee and have a bit of a chat on life, on what's going on where we're moving forwards. Henry's an entrepreneur and also a out-of-the-box thinker.
Sure.
So I could, as a younger adult, I guess, or a young kid, I don't know, whatever, when I was younger, I would also look up to him as somebody who is always looking for new ideas and projects, and I really like this, and I could see a piece of myself in it. So, you know, to shorten my learning curve, I wanted to be also exposed to Henry a little bit. And I'm so blessed. He's another blessing in my life, you know, another of the people that have been inspiring and a mentor in some way. So this has been very nice.
Sure.
I'm sure he views you the same way as a blessing in his life.
Kindred cheers, spirits, man. For sure. Cool. Well, Luca, that's all the time we have. So it's really been a pleasure to see you, to speak to you, to listen to your experiences. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Luca, that's all for the time. It's been a blast. To our listeners, it's great that you followed along to Inside Out.
The podcast for and by alumni and current students of the Sports Studies program at the Hogeschool van Amsterdam. Looking back to who you were, but also looking forward to who you want to be.